This is Bloomberg Law with June Grosso and Mark Mills.
Another Supreme Court patent decision, another ruling against patent holders. The justices grapple with the standards for software patents, considering the issue for the first time in decades. Yesterday, the court ruled that software developers can't get a patent just by taking an abstract idea and implementing it on a computer. During the oral arguments in the case, several justices expressed skepticism that the financial services patents in the case were anything more than abstract ideas. Here's Justice Anthony Kennedy.
If you describe that to a second-year college class in engineering and said, here's my idea, now you go home and you program over this weekend, my guess is that that would be fairly easy to program.
And Justice Stephen Breyer, of course, with a more dramatical hypothetical.
Imagine King Tut sitting in front of the pyramid where all his gold is stored, and he has the habit of giving chits away. Good for the gold, which is given at the end of the day, and he hires a man with an abacus, and when the abacus keeping track sees that he's given away more gold than he has in storage, he says, "Stop!" Or my mother, who used to look at my checkbook, when she saw that, in fact, I'd written more checks than I had in the account, she would grab it.
Our guest is patent attorney Jeffrey Bergman of Osha Liang. Thanks for coming back on the show, Jeff. We are not going to check your gold or your checkbook.
Thanks so much, June. I appreciate the opportunity to talk on this. And Justin Breyer is always very colorful in his analogies.
He really is. Jeff, we have a decision. It was against the patent holder, but both sides declared victory. Who is the real winner here?
You know, it's interesting. I would say that, like everything, there's winners and losers, and there's a clear loser here. And to me, the clear losers are the so-called patent assertion entities, which more colloquially are referred to as patent trolls. I think they're really the big losers out of this scheme. The other parties in tech companies in general, it's a mixed bag for them. There's clearly, however, a strong indication by the court that they are not interested in business method patents per se as a general class of patents. And I think that sort of comports with where everybody was going, and certainly the feel of Congress and the feel of sort of the American public in general, that these sorts of patents really aren't something that the patent office should be allowing people to protect. It was an interesting case. I think some of the analysis is quite interesting. So to answer your question in one sentence, I think the big losers are patent trolls, the big winners, tech companies who face those kinds of suits.
This is the sixth time this year that the Supreme Court limited the power of patent holders. Some might say the Supreme Court does not appear to be a fan of patents, Jeff.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I mean, this is really, for a very long time, the Supreme Court has not been interested at all in dealing with patents. They very rarely pick up cases. Some of this is pushback against, I think, what they view as a sort of rogue appeals court. There is a special appeals court for patent cases, the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals. And in almost every decision, other than this one, they've gone against the Federal Circuit. Here, they actually supported the Federal Circuit, although the Federal Circuit was kind of had a mixed bag of feelings about this. But it's been interesting to see sort of a revival of the Supreme Court's interest in this area. And particularly, it has been pretty much across the board going against patent holders. Here, I think nobody's losing any real sleep over the fact that this class of patents is going away. The broader question, and the question that becomes now subject to a lot of litigation, is what they actually mean by what is an abstract idea.
We're speaking with Jeffrey Bergman, a partner at Osha Liang. And Jeffrey, there were a lot of companies that weighed in on this and entered briefs on this. We reporting in Bloomberg that businesses including Google and Amazon urged the court to weed out baseless royalty demands, while software makers led by Microsoft said overly strict limits on patents would reduce incentives to develop cutting-edge programs. Are there any winners and losers to sort out from this decision?
Yeah, exactly. That's a really good point. And that shows the sort of difficult situation that tech companies are in here. Tech companies want to maintain patents because, as you point out, it's good for investment. It allows them to control areas, particularly Microsoft, Oracle, Intuit. Those kinds of companies have lots of patents in this area and have generated lots of patents. But at the same time, they've been subject to lots and lots of lawsuits that deal with very vague subject matter. And so they've been forced, sort of almost extorted, to pay royalty fees or fight litigations. And in the U.S., obviously, fighting patent litigations is several $1 million a drop hit whenever you're fighting a litigation, and you have to announce it to your shareholders, and there's a lot of uncertainty around it. So on the whole, this decision, I think, gives some surety to tech companies that these kinds of business method patents that really go to things that corporations have done forever are no longer going to get issued new patents. It's an interesting question because it's, you know, at the beginning of the day, at the beginning, there's three tests that really ask, that the patent office asks when issuing a patent. They ask, hey, is this idea eligible for subject matter? Hey, is it new? Hey, is it obvious? Those are the three real questions that the patent office is trying to analyze. And the problem in this area historically has been, in order to say something is not new or something is obvious, the patent office has to find printed documents. And companies aren't generally in the business of producing a lot of documents about, hey, this is how we do escrow, as in this case. Really, all this case was computerized escrow accounts, right? So there's not a lot of things for the patent office when they're actually looking at whether or not to issue a patent to find and say, no, your patent's not allowable. So what the court has done here is empowered the patent office to take that test back out of analyzing prior art, like we call it, but instead saying, is this really just something companies do that everybody knows that this is what companies do and they've just thrown it on the internet? And that's where a lot of these tech companies have really struggled with fighting litigation, is that they can't find documents that say where these things exist as prior art or have been done forever, because nobody writes about what you do every day, right? So the issue becomes more of one for the patent office to prevent the issuance of new patents now, as well as throwing into doubt large swaths of patents that really are just pure business methods. So from the company's point of view, I think they get some surety there.
We've been talking with Jeff Bergman, a patent lawyer with Osha Liang, about the Supreme Court's decision yesterday, unanimous decision that you can take an abstract idea, implement it on a computer, and get a patent for it. Jeff, software patents granted annually soared from 2,000 in 1980 to 40,000. And patent holders now at the Supreme Court, 0 and 6, we're talking about the patent office, the patent office that looks through these and decides whether or not it's going to grant a patent. Will the office be looking at these differently now? Are they going to be studying this opinion?
Absolutely. And in fact, after the last series of decisions having to do with some biotech stuff, the patent office actually issued a new series of guidelines on how to analyze these patent eligible, whether or not a patent is eligible for being patented. And similarly, we expect that there's going to be a bunch of guidelines, which are documents written internally to the examiners who actually look at each one of these cases, on how to look at these things. The real question, and the answer we don't have yet, is how the patent office is going to deal with what is an abstract idea. Here, you know, like I said, the court sort of conflated what used to be two separate inquiries, which is it eligible and is it known already, and made that sort of one test of if it's known, it's abstract. If the patent office starts going down that route, we will see many fewer issued cases going down in the future, particularly depending on the breadth of what is abstract. There's lots of things that you could say are abstract. You could look at sonar, for example. It's just math, right? You're sending out a signal, you're inverse scattering, you're getting back that information. So if I develop a new way to deal with that data, is that now an abstract idea? So there's some uncertainty, and I think that's really where the interest is going to be on the tech company side, as well as other parties, people like oil companies who deal with seismic data and deal with processing that data. Is this idea of how abstract needs it be going to extend into those industries as well?
We're speaking with Jeffrey Bergman, a partner at Osha Liang, here on Bloomberg Law on Bloomberg Radio, talking about a Supreme Court patent ruling. And Jeffrey, does this decision give some strength to someone like Google, other tech companies that are fighting what they believe to be frivolous lawsuits over software patents? Will this slow down the so-called patent trolls and maybe clean up some of that stuff going on in the courts?
I strongly believe so, Mark. I think you will see a lot of briefing and a lot of pending cases that now switch from it was anticipated or it was obvious, i.e. it was known before, it was obvious to do this thing, to this just isn't eligible subject matter. It gives them a lot of arguments. I think that you'll see a large number of quick decisions coming out of district courts that are getting rid of a lot of these cases. I think that's really what the big win is here at the end of the day for tech companies, is that they now have a very strong arrow in their quiver against these patent trolls, particularly because the types of patents that the patent trolls have been aggregating tend to be these sorts of business method-y, very vague, sort of older patents that have been, that they say extend to, oh, no, no, now that it's on the internet, it's not obvious anymore. And so I think there's some real surety and some real weapons there now for tech companies particularly.
And just to be clear, did the Supreme Court in any way change the law, or did they just give an interpretation that clarifies it, at least from their perspective?
I think they just were trying to clarify it. It's been forever that abstract ideas aren't patentable. They just put some more teeth into the concept of what is an abstract idea. They allowed courts and the patent office to say abstract can mean stuff that's known, that's done in the ordinary course of business, and by just throwing something that's been done here, again, this was about escrowing, that putting on a computer doesn't change the fundamental nature that shouldn't be patentable.
Jeff, you were talking before about the Federal Circuit, and we actually did a show last week about the Supreme Court and the Federal Circuit and how it's sort of been a wrestling match between those two courts. Why, after 2 decades, why did the court take this case now? Is it because the Federal Circuit had some fractured opinions below, or is there a different reason?
I think it's because it's been so fractured, and frankly, I also think because there's sort of a public interest in dealing with this, and perhaps the court didn't feel, they felt like they could inject some surety into the patent process, and particularly for tech companies, of dealing with what I think is viewed pretty broadly as a real drain on the economy right now with this patent troll litigation going on, and they felt this was a good opportunity to step in and really get rid of a class of patents. And you can see, and even in the concurrence written by Justice Sotomayor, that she simply doesn't believe any type of business method patent should be ever patentable, that it just simply doesn't qualify as subject matter that should be eligible. So I think the court here is, one, dealing with the fact that a lot of applicants in this area, a lot of the companies have struggled with what is patentable, what is not patentable, and they really wanted to set more of a bright line test of putting something on a computer by itself isn't enough.
Jeffrey, do you think there were cases that were in process here that this will tilt in another direction, or were parties to it sort of standing by and waiting for the court to see what would happen? Did this affect, say, a number of cases that might be pending?
Oh, yes. I think for sure this is going to affect a large number of cases that are currently either in litigation or about to go to appeal, or that people were thinking of filing. I think now patent trolls are really going to have to be careful about the types of suits they file, particularly since this has been coupled with a bunch of decisions that are starting to allow attorney's fees in this area for victorious parties. So I think you've got this sense of there's a really momentum shifting from the patent troll side of things to the more typical company side of things. So I think there will be a large number of cases that this affects.
We've talked before about patents and the reasons for patents and the protection of innovation and American innovation. Even President Barack Obama has talked about that. In this case, we have some people, for example, the CEO of the Software Alliance, saying this opinion, which denies a patent, makes clear that real software inventions are patentable and that it is a victory for innovation. How is it a victory for innovation?
Well, I think what they're getting at is, if you're doing something truly new, if you're developing a new software, and they reference it in the body of the opinion as well, that if you are solving a problem that industry has, if you are doing something that nobody else has done before, that's still patentable. And that's really what the software companies are looking for. What they want to get away from is the sort of genericized patents that go towards particularly a lot of these have to do with hedge funds or financial exchange methods, things that people have done, banks have done for long periods of time, but simply been moved onto a computer platform, but no innovation has actually occurred. So from a software perspective, if you're still innovating, if you're still creating some new way to do something that isn't historically been done by industry, you're going to be fine and you're going to be able to obtain patents. So I feel at the end of the day, the software companies are going to be pretty happy with this result.
Is this the you know, they often talk about what kind of cases you try to take, you take to the Supreme Court, and it should be a case that's good for what you're advocating. Was this the right kind of case to take to the Supreme Court on software patents?
Yes and no. I think from one perspective, certainly. I think it was a very good case to take on the business method type of software patents that are simply, as I said, just implementing something that people have done and throwing into the internet environment. I think there was a real fear of lawsuits and people getting sued by these sorts of companies on, if I've always been doing this type of business and I move it now just to the internet, even if it's something like taking restaurant reservations or things like that, where you can now do it on OpenTable. If people can get patents on methods of, you know, taking reservations, there's a whole swath of industry that then gets affected that shouldn't be affected, right? So it becomes a good case from that point of view. It doesn't really set forth a great bright line test on what do you need to transform a abstract idea into something more. They hint at the fact that there is more you can do, but they don't really give you a test for what that is. And I think there's going to be a lot of litigation about that second test of what more do we need to do to an abstract idea to transform it into a non-abstract concept that's patentable.
Jeffrey Bergman, thank you so much for joining us today on Bloomberg Law. Jeffrey Bergman is a partner at OSHA Liang, joining us to talk about a Supreme Court ruling on patents. And June Grosso, we have some time left. You want to add something?
Well, no, I just wanted to say that Monday we're expecting a lot of the very controversial Supreme Court cases
like
to come out.
This is like somebody's baby is 2 weeks overdue. Come on.
Well, they
can
go on vacation on July, you know, June 30th should be the day. July 1st, they're usually out the door to their vacation, so we'll see.
Right. Lots of big cases still to come from the court, and we'll be looking at them next week.
Right. Same-sex couples in the U.S. would be eligible for leave to care for their spouses regardless of whether they live in a state that recognizes gay marriage under rules the Obama administration plans to propose. The White House says President Barack Obama directed the Labor Department to draft rules that will allow gay and lesbian couples in all states to take unpaid time under the Family and Medical Care Leave Act.
Dov Charney is expected to fight his removal as CEO of American Apparel. On Wednesday, American Apparel's board announced that they would terminate Charney as chief executive officer, even though he tried to convince them otherwise at a board meeting in New York that lasted several hours, according to two people familiar with the matter. Chief Financial Officer John Luttrell was named interim CEO. The company's early successes were overshadowed by controversy after several female employees accused Charney of sexual harassment. More recently, the business has suffered from overexpansion and distribution problems.
Ex-champion cyclist Lance Armstrong, whose team was sponsored by the U.S. Postal Service, will have to face claims in a $120 million whistleblower lawsuit that he defrauded the government by using performance-enhancing drugs. A federal judge rejected Armstrong's bid to have the case dismissed, saying the claims made in a lawsuit by former teammate Floyd Landis were sufficient.
All right. Thank you, June. And thank you all for listening to Bloomberg Law today and all this week.
Listen to Bloomberg Law weekday afternoons at 12:30 Eastern, Saturdays at 7 a.m., 12 p.m., 5 p.m., and 10 p.m. Eastern. In New York on Bloomberg 1130. In Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2. Or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, channel 119. Copyright 2014, Bloomberg LP.